Reclaiming Camelot. Chapter 3. Written by Tannerian. Read by Fairy D 123. Jack sat in the hotel room he had rented and stared down at the envelope he had taken out of Vianto's desk. Practically the only thought that had gone through his mind for a while now was the realization that Vianto had been the last person who had touched the paper he was holding. It was the most tenuous of contacts, but right now it was the best he had. He smiled a little mirthlessly at the chaos inside his head. Who would have thought that the notorious Jack Harkness would have been reduced to this by a linear time innocent from a backwater planet and barely literate time? He knew he was putting off the inevitable, but seeing Torchwood 3 like that had shaken him far more than he liked to admit. It might not have been much, but it had been his kingdom for quite a few years, and he had grown fond of the people within it. And one of his subjects had gone on to become much, much more. He shook off his procrastination and opened the envelope with one decisive movement. He smiled at the thick cream paper he pulled out. He had teased Vianto unmercifully when he'd discovered the Welshman's weakness for handmade paper and penmanship, but had eventually come to understand why Vianto enjoyed the care and creativity that went into writing a proper letter. It had been a ritual, like making the coffee, that wasn't strictly necessary, but gave life a little more weight and meaning. Seeing the familiar writing made him gasp a little, but he focused on the words hungrily. "Sir, I have no idea if you will ever read this letter. I suppose the very fact that I am writing it is a triumph of optimism over practicality, but you were always telling me that I needed to be a little more spontaneous. I know that you have left with the doctor, and I hope that he will be able to give you what we could not. I'm afraid my bitterness does prompt me to say that if you had confided in us a little more, we might have been more used to you. But I suppose the fact that we betrayed you in opening the rift does justify your keeping silent. If you have returned, then it must be to reclaim your personal possessions. I took the liberty of packing them away before they could be taken by Torchwood, and I have placed them with a storage company, with sufficient funds to maintain it for 5 years from the date of this letter. If you have returned after that date, I hope the doctor will be amenable to shifting you back to the correct time period. I have hidden the details of where your possessions are within the Torchwood database. You will find it in the file that contains information about the mission where you insisted on keeping me awake all night, trying to win at Trivial Pursuit. And the key word is the foodstuff you said you used to stop the invaders who invaded a certain seaside town. I still don't believe that story. I do not think that London will leave us alone for much longer, and I also think I am no longer the kind of person they would find useful. I am grateful to you for giving me a glimpse of something bigger and better, and I only wish I could have lived up to your standards. If I had, then perhaps you would have waited to say goodbye. It would have been something to hold on to now that the nights are so dark and cold. I am tired, sir. Tired of being wrong, of not being good enough, of seeing my world turn to ash in my hands. When London comes, they will discover my crimes, and then I will be called to account. I have seen what becomes of the unfortunates they wreck on, and there is enough of the rebel in me to want to choose my own fate. I have made sure that I will counter any subconscious triggers that might make me regain my memories. I have done enough of these to turn it into an art form, which is why I knew you wanted Gwen to come back to us when you insisted on doing her yourself. Sometimes I knew you. If you have come back and you are the one reading this, please take a little time to look out for Tosh and Gwen. Owen is a survivor, but they still have enough humanity in them to be hurt. If you ever felt anything for us, please do this kindness. I do not think that the doctor would begrudge it of you. I hope you are happy in your new life. You were kinder to me than I deserved, and I will always be grateful for that. Vianto. Jack dropped the letter onto the bed before his shaking hands crushed the delicate paper. He felt sick. Barely a word of recrimination, but every sentence clawed at his conscience. Vianto thought that he would come back for a few knick-knacks? He thought he'd failed to come up to some yardstick Jack had. What the hell had he ever done to make Vianto put him on so high a pedestal? And how was it that he never seemed to fall off the damn thing for more than a couple of days, no matter how stupid or petty he acted? For a moment he felt like leaving the hotel room and just going. leaving Cardiff in the incredible mess that everything seemed to have gotten into during one tiny year. He knew he wasn't going to do that. These were his people, even if he had managed to forget that for a little while. They were his, and no bunch of amateurs from London were going to come in and tear them apart. Gwen was beyond his help, but he was going to make damn sure that the others were safe. And he was going to track Ianto down, and then they'd see how much of an expert the younger man was where retcon was concerned. He ate a light meal at the hotel, and then made for the location he had given Andy. He took the scenic route, and kept a careful watch out for any followers. If they were around, they were very good. But to be honest, Jack was in the right kind of mood to want to be accosted just now. Knocking a few heads together would be very therapeutic. The club was still there, and just as noisy and crowded as he remembered. He grinned as he recalled the time he had brought Ianto here, and the Welshman had very ostentatiously put earplugs in his ears, only to yelp when Jack had deliberately pulled them out with his teeth. He ordered some water with lemon and ice, and settled back to wait for Andy to arrive. He was still a little bemused to think that he was reduced to relying on Andy Davidson. He was busy working out how he would get access to the Torchwood database when he felt a hard poke in his back and turned around to find himself nose to nose with a furious Andy. "What?" "This is a gay club," Andy hissed in his ear. "Yeah, so?" Jack responded, then grinned when Andy looked like he was going to have a coronary. He was surprised to see that the young policeman scrubbed up very well, wearing a pair of black cord slacks, a dark red T-shirt, and what Jack was delighted to see was a World War II style bomber jacket. "People have been looking at me," Andy said, in what could only be described as a darkly meaningful way. "New meat always attracts attention," Jack said mischievously, laughing at the horrified squawk that earned him as he attracted the barman's notice. 10 minutes and they were ushered into a small room that was mercifully soundproofed. Andy sidled in with much the same expression of a Christian martyr being shown into the arena, and the amused smile on the barman's face as he shut the door behind him probably didn't help. Once the door was safely closed, Jack shucked off his coat and sprawled onto the low couch. "Help yourself to the beer," he said, gesturing at the pitcher and glasses the barman had set on the table, "and stop hyperventilating. I only jump willing virgins." That earned him a ferocious glare, and Andy stalked forward to help himself to a beer, supremely unaware of how attractive his angry strut was, or how well the slack showed off his rear as he bent over. Jack laughed softly, but refused to elaborate when Andy gave him a suspicious look. He patted the couch beside him. "Sit and tell me what you couldn't say at the hub." When Andy continued to dither, Jack lost patience and pulled him down beside him, almost spilling the beer. "Damn it, Andy, what happened to my people?" "Why don't you just ring up Torchwood and ask?" Andy retorted. His eyes narrowed when Jack looked away. "I knew it. I knew there was something cockeyed going on. Tosh was so damn nervy all the time, and her letter was so lonely." "Tosh wrote you a letter?" Jack asked, turning back to face him. Can I see it?" he asked, surprised about how diffident he sounded. "Of course you can see it, you daft bugger," Andy snorted. "Did you think it was a love note? Here, and then I'll give you the one she gave me to keep for you." Jack grabbed the letter and scanned it quickly, swallowing the leap his heart made when Tosh made her veiled reference to Ianto. He saw what Andy meant, though. There was a sense of loneliness to Tosh's words that made his heart ache for her. What surprised him was the fact that Andy had also picked up on it, when he had barely met Tosh, and he mentally upgraded the young policeman a couple of notches. He looked up when Andy proffered another envelope and ripped it open, hoping that this would give him something solid to go on. "I don't know, you people and your letters," Andy muttered. "Whatever happened to phoning or meeting one another and just telling them what you mean?" "I was out of reach for the past year," Jack said a little absently as he started to read. "Dear Jack, leaving a letter for you like this seems like an overly dramatic thing to do, but you were always so much larger than life that a dramatic gesture seems totally fitting. I miss you. God, how I miss you. I never knew how much of a part of my world you were until you had gone, and there was suddenly a great big hole in the centre of it. I don't mean this in a romantic sense, in case I'm making you nervous. It's just that you were so much more than a boss to me. You were a friend, a mentor, a yardstick to measure myself by, the supportive colleague and the annoying bastard who always made me want to try harder, if only to wipe that grin off your face. Things have changed since you left. We tried to hide your absence from London, but we could only stall so long, even with Ianto forging your signature, which he did startlingly well, I have to say. And Owen's attitude didn't exactly help matters when they caught up with us. They came sweeping in, acting as if we were badly behaved children who needed to be sent to bed without supper. I have to say that it annoyed me. I sort of expected us to present a united front against them. But Ianto had already left. Clever Ianto. And then Owen did the dirty on us by striking a deal behind our backs. After that, it was all over, bar the shouting. And they told us they would be shutting us down and transferring us all back to London, which has been reactivated. Owen was delighted, but Gwen was horrified. Gwen. Oh, Gwen. Jack, I'm so afraid that London did something terrible. Gwen said she was going to resign and go back to the police. She said that she'd be willing to accept being retconned if it meant staying in Cardiff with Rhys. Something in me knew that she was making a bad decision, but I couldn't pin down what was bothering me. 2 days after she told Sellers that she wanted to resign, she was a victim of a hit-and-run accident. Jack, part of me, a large part of me, doesn't believe it was an accident. I think they killed her because it was too difficult to retcon her properly. I tackled Owen about it, and he wouldn't answer me, and that tells me more than I want to know. Ianto is safe. He was wiser than all of us and saw which way the wind was blowing. I don't know if it will mean much to you, but I think a large part of him died when you left. He just didn't seem to care any more. I suppose Torchwood has caused him more heartache than the rest of us put together. I only lost the one lover. He lost two. I've destroyed every hint of where he went and his new identity, and I knew from my checks that he covered his own tracks very well. In a little while I will retcon myself, and condition myself to forget that I ever knew where Ianto was going. But just in case you do come back and do want to find him, I'll leave one get-out clause for you to reactivate my memories. I think your sense of the dramatic has rubbed off on me. One clue. It's something you often said where Ianto was concerned. I'll work it so it has to be your voice, saying the words as well, as an extra precaution. They're taking me back with them to London, and I'm willing to go. Now that you and Ianto are gone and the horrible taste is in my mouth over Gwen's death, I realize that I don't want to stay. The hub is full of ghosts, and there are sad shadows I can't bear to meet. Even though it's silly, I still dream of you returning and sweeping in to rescue me in that melodramatic coat of yours, that insane smile on your face that tells the world that it had better watch out because the captain's back in town. Please come for me, Jack. Please rescue me. All my love, Tosh. Jack was surprised to feel tears pricking at his eyelids as he finished the letter. Poor Tosh. Gwen's humanity had been overt and on the surface, but Tosh had hidden hers under a layer of professionalism and introverted genius. She had been trying to find her own voice after years of being the good little team player, and while she had made mistakes, they had always stemmed from her desire to help others, and not from anything petty or avaricious. He wished he had told her that he was proud of her. Well, he still had his chance with her, unlike Gwen. Lifting his eyes, he saw Andy eyeing up the letter. An intuition told him that Andy had kept faith and never opened the envelope to see what Tosh had written. Jack knew full well that he would have done so. After a moment, he handed it over to the man and watched as Andy read it, his boyish face tightening as he did so. They murdered her, didn't they? He demanded when he finished. Gwen, I mean. Jack sighed and nodded. I think so, but it's not going to be something that can be proved. Something your lot do a lot, is it? There was a definite air of belligerence to Andy Davidson, and Jack swallowed a smile, knowing that Andy would misread it as condescension rather than approval. Not on my patch while I was here, but London might have been a different matter. He allowed his own voice to harden as he continued. This won't be forgotten, Andy, even if there might not be a public accounting. Come to that, it might do more harm than good for Rhys and Gwen's family to know that she was murdered. She was mine, though, and they crossed the line when they did this. I'm not a good enemy to have." Andy stared at him for a long moment, then dropped his eyes as he didn't quite succeed in suppressing a shiver. "I'm a policeman," he mumbled. "I'm not supposed to condone someone talking like that." He lifted his gaze again, and Jack saw the faint sheen of tears in his eyes. "But she'd never be avenged if we did things my way, would she? And she didn't deserve what they did to her." "No," Jack agreed softly, "she didn't. She deserved a happy life with the man she loved, with kids and a career to be proud of. But she met me, and I sucked her into my ugly little world instead. And she still tried to make it a better place. And in a way she did, because there's no way in hell that I'm going to let her death be in vain. They might not know it yet, but Torchwood London have declared war, and I'm more than happy to take them up on it."